This is a KUNV Studios original program.
The content of this program does not reflect the views or opinions of 91.5 Jazz and More, the University of Nevada, Las Vegas, or the Board of Regents of the Nevada System of Higher Education.
Good morning, and thank you for joining me for The Scoop with Tanya Flanagan. I'm so happy you decided to wake up and start your day with me. Here on The Scoop, where we talk about life, joy, funny moments, trending topics, and so much more. We promise to keep you in the know and find out what you know. So, let's get started. Good morning, Las Vegas, and welcome to the show. Thank you once again for getting up on a Sunday morning, a beautiful Sunday morning, to join me. It's been a wonderful weekend, a little cloudy here and there, but nonetheless a great weekend. Once again, I have a great show for you, what I think is a great show, and a really interesting individual in the studio with me to chat this morning. So without further ado, I'm going to welcome Dr. Lauren Chapel Love to The Scoop. Good morning.
Good morning. So glad we could get up and talk about some stuff this morning.
I know you are not, but I appreciate you for, starting off with that story of color. I'm so glad we could get up. You are such a night owl. Really, I'm a night owl, too. But as I get older, I enjoy the desert mornings. I think as you mature, you begin to appreciate the things that when you were younger, you slept through. Because I was a night owl and I have been forever. You know, when you grow up in the desert, it's warm and beautiful outside. And so truth of the matter is my favorite season is spring and it's summer. We're going to talk about renewal a little bit. I think that is in line with what you do. We're going to get into that in a moment. But spring and summer were my favorite season. So when you grow up in the desert, I grew up in Arizona, lived 29 years here in Las Vegas, and heat is what you know. So in the summer, you wait for the sun to go down. And when you're young, you do what? You hang out all night. So you become a night owl and you kind of miss the mornings. But as you get older, it tends to shift. And so I enjoy waking up to a beautiful morning. So I'm glad you can share this one with me.
Absolutely. I'm more of a fall girly. So I get down with Halloween and late nights. So
I get down with late nights, just spring and summer ones. as we get into the space of spring and we're, you know, almost cruising through and out of April, the month of spring is birth and it's renewal. You are a psychologist. You are a licensed psychologist. You are the founder of L Psychology. And that's that's cool. You're a Black woman who's a psychologist and you're in sort of a specialized area. So you have a number of degrees. You've been to all kinds of schools, Bay Path University, the Chicago School of Professional Psychology, did your PhD at the University of North Dakota. I have to ask, University of North Dakota as a Black woman.
Oh, here we go.
You know, it's the same stigma I get. Ooh. Being African-American from Arizona. And I used to get it. What? There are Black people in Arizona? Really? Yes, we're everywhere. But I have to ask, were we really in North Dakota?
I mean, you know, what do the guys say on the show? There's dozens of us. I was fighting for my life. I think that whenever you go to a really homogenized place like North Dakota, meaning it's people that have been there generation after generation, and not many of those people looked like me, I think it's important to find your crew, the people, you know. Found family is something that helped me get through North Dakota.
So you do, though. I can relate to that because I spent a short season. I spent a season, literally it was 4 months. So I spent a season in Walla Walla, Washington. And it is exactly that, home of the famous Walla Walla onions. And it is exactly that. But they have some amazing private, you know, universities and colleges there. And so academia is really huge and people found their way there to study. Interesting Black folk, really. And it's like a small community within the community. And you absolutely do gravitate to those who are akin to your culture and understand things about you. And so I did find, you know, refuge and laughter and all that stuff in the strange space of I thought it would just be me in Walla Walla, Washington, because I mean, it was it's in, you know, the sun is up until 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock at night. So it's crazy how much sun you have. I could get so much done in a given day. I thought I was going to lose my mind. But as I met people and found, you know, people who looked like me and just everyone that was around me, it was a cool experience. But I know what you mean. Places like that that seem like you're going to be a little isolated, you do find your own, and it's very welcoming and the arms are open. So I can imagine that you survived North Dakota with a lot of love around you.
Literally, I met my spouse out there, and I also got exposed to some, I was doing more than studying, apparently.
But I probably met my spouse in Walla Walla, but I left him there. Just kidding. It was what I call boutique dating. I feel like my parents did boutique dating, too, because they met in northern Arizona in this small town.
There you go.
A small lumber mill town, and I'm like, it's boutique dating. I think that's what happened to
there
them.
There you go. But I got exposed to other cultures too. You know, I saw a breath of like indigenous culture out there, and got to go to powwows and all kinds of just like ceremonial things that I had never gone to before. So I did like it. It was not all bad. I will say this: it was cold. It was colder than what I could say on the radio, I'm afraid. But they didn't shut the school down until it was like, I don't know, negative 40 or something, or 60 sometimes. And I was just like, ooh, we.
That was just
extremes.
You just work, and then I moved to the desert. Yeah, you were done. So you came to the warmth, so you could thaw out permanently forever. Mm-hmm. But let's get into a little bit more of who you are. I've mentioned and introduced that you are a licensed psychologist, and I thought it would be really cool to talk with you because of your area of expertise and what you focus on is unique and specialized. And so when I've had the pleasure of meeting you on a number of different occasions, but to really dig into who you are and a little bit of your background, it's just cool. You offer individual psychotherapy, diversity, equity, inclusion, consultations. You do speaking and you do trainings. And within that, you help a segment of the population cope with things. And I like the way you've worded it, oppression and majority, what did you call it? Majority culture spaces.
Yeah.
And so you do a lot with the LGBTQ AI. So I learned some things here too. And Black, Indigenous, people of color groups as well. So why psychology to begin with, because you didn't just study it in undergrad. You went all the way through and did the PhD. And so something about that field has to capture you. So what was it for you that made you go down this path?
I did. It resonated with me. I think for me, so I do a lot of forensic psychology work, and that's just psychology work within the legal system. So sometimes treating people who are incarcerated, doing evaluations, all that kind of stuff. For me, it's because I was nosy. So when I was a kid, you're like, you still are. Yes, ma'am. I can be receptive to that feedback. It's okay. But yeah, when I was a kid, my parents had this extensive bookshelf, and some of the books on it were like true crime. And the rule in my household was you can't read nothing like that until you're like 14. I was like, okay, so I waited.
So how much did you sneak the books off the shelf when you weren't supposed to?
The way my anxiety is set up, I think I did one bad thing when I was a kid. I wore my pants backwards like crisscross, and I changed it, and I felt bad. It's okay.
So what you're saying is you're also a rule follower. So you're a rule follower. Is that what I'm hearing?
I am, yeah.
I would have never pegged you to be, I mean, not like, you know, just disruptive, but not really a rule follower either. Okay. I just knew you pulled the books off the shelf.
I work within the system to bring it down, for sure, for sure. No, okay. But yeah, so by the time I got there, I was like, okay, and I started reading books about, you know, why some people do things to other people, and that just interested me. So I'm hard to embarrass. I called up a forensic psychologist where I grew up. And I said, hey, you don't know me. I'm a high school kid. I'm a pipsqueak. But, you know, give me some books to read. Like, how did you get your job? Help me understand. And he was kind enough to take me on as a mentee. And I haven't looked back. I went on through to the undergrad. I went to graduate school. I worked with my master's for 4 years. I hit a glass ceiling and I said, let me go on, head on and get this doctorate. And then I did. And here I am.
It's really, well, congratulations, first of all, to you. But even more so, a Black woman who's into forensic psychology is not something that you really see every day. It makes me think of the conversations that we have all the time, where if you see it, you can be it. If you see it, you can believe it. I don't know, honestly, until meeting you, really truthfully, and I've been a crime reporter, that I've ever mm-hmm. actually met a forensic psychologist who was a Black woman. I I don't know that I've really ever met one, but the idea of who you are and what you do. A few shows ago, I had LaTanya Lister on, and she was the first Black woman in Nevada to become a firefighter with any of the fire departments here in the state.
Oh, amazing.
And so, you know, when you have those kinds of first, or you meet people who've done, you know, the thing where they're the anomaly. They shouldn't be, but you are. I have to tip my hat. I have to tip my hat and say kudos to you, because you're a living example of what someone can grow up to be, having never thought about being it. But you thought about it. You were interested, and you did what was necessary to knock down the doors and open them to pursue it. So kudos to you for doing that.
Yeah, yeah. I think it takes a village. Like, I do the thing, right? But mm-hmm. Where I grew up outside of Chicago, there was not but a few ways to get up out of the neighborhood. You can maybe carry a basketball, you could sing, something like that. So for me to get out, you know, academically, that was unheard of. I didn't even know that was a job. That's why I said I'm going to date myself a little bit. When I was putting my finger through the phone book, looking at names, I didn't even know it was a job. Like, nobody told me it was a job. We mm-hmm. we didn't have, in my public school, we didn't have that kind of career counseling. So mm-hmm. By no means knocking other professions. I come from a blue collar family, and I think it was really just a village. Like, it took having people around me so I could ask those questions that I didn't know. Like, I didn't know how to write a college essay. I didn't know what a resume was supposed to look like. So I think it took a lot. And now that I'm here, I view my job as to whatever room I get into, I'm going to hold my arm back and make sure I hold the door open for whomever else is trying to get up in there.
Well, thank you. I want to say, too, we share something in common. I believe you are an Emerge Nevada alumni.
True.
And Emerge, for those who are not familiar, is a course that trains women of various backgrounds who are Democratic to run for office or impact civic engagement in whatever platform or by whatever means they choose. But we have both gone through this training program, which is a 6-month course for women interested in politics, and you meet every month and you just learn all these different things about running a campaign or organizing in your community, organizing people, contributing to campaigns, supporting them, and just understanding more about the political process as a whole. But more importantly, also, it's a space that allows you to understand more about yourself as an individual in terms of your passions and how you mm-hmm. can channel that passion into action. And so I just want to welcome you also as my fellow Emerge. I mean, you weren't in the class of 2019, which of course is the foremost, the best one, mine.
Oh, well,
but you know, you were in the other one.
So
you
were hot on y'all's heels.
You were. And I brought that up because Emerge introduces a lot of thought, general thought, mm-hmm. Open thought. And you do some focus on diversity, equity, and inclusion. And as we are seeing our society evolve and a lot of changes in this country, and we're dealing with mental health so seriously on so many levels, you're in a space that for a while I thought was beginning to fall by the wayside, because there was this whole movement of diversity and inclusion and hiring people. And then it seemed like it just was a thing that everybody kind of acted like they had reached some numbers and they had done something. And now we see a lot of stuff associated with it just constantly getting dialed back. How does your work help people cope with how society is changing, what it's affecting in terms of how it's affecting people's mental health, and how that plays into this diversity, inclusion, and equity conversation?
Excellent question. I think it starts with better understanding historical perspective. I very tongue-in-cheek say that, you know, racism was not invented in the summer of 2020 when we all blacked out our, you know, our Instagram squares and held hands. And I think it when we take a look at how people can be impacted by these isms, racism, trans, you know, phobia, et cetera, that we can start to really get a better understanding of how things shift. So while things might have looked very different 4 years ago, a couple few years ago, now I work a lot with people on just validating, like, yes, you're not making this up. There is such a thing as racial trauma, and that is how we process being exposed to microaggressions, how we process being exposed to the things on the news and the other things that go on in our world, and how to work through that in a resilient way, how to find our family, our crew, if you will, and learn how to build support in and around our community. So that tends to be something I focus on, either at the individual level, working with people in psychotherapy, or going to organizations who come to me and say, hey, we want to get better at this, or we want you to do some listening sessions with our staff to see how things are. Because for a lot of people, the power differential is there, right? Like, am I going to tell my boss, mm-hmm. I feel uncomfortable with that joke he made at the water cooler? No. So they call in somebody like me to better help understand what's going on, and then figure out how to make the changes that are going to help.
Are you finding that companies are really forward-thinking like that, and that they are, is it major corporations that are forward-thinking, or are you finding that smaller operations that want to keep a close-knit feeling of family in their offices are forward-thinking and saying, hey, come in and work with us. We'd love to have a training. You know, how organic is it?
Yeah, I've had some amazing organic conversations with companies, big and small, like larger university versus like smaller kind of mom and pop. Like, we've had this, you know, these 60 employees, you know, for the past two generations of this small organization kind of thing. And I think, unfortunately, the majority of folks that I speak with are in a reactionary circumstance. Maybe some employees got together and said, hey, we don't like what's going on here. Mm-hmm. We need to make some serious shifts or changes to the culture here, meaning the company culture. Do I feel safe going in the office? Do I feel safe, you know, in this way, that way, and the third? I think a lot of mental health, behavioral health, sadly, mm-hmm. comes at the behest of a reaction. Something will happen. Yes. And then everybody will look around and be like, wait a minute, what's going on? Who was this person's therapist? Who, you know, why didn't this person have someone to speak to? And that's why I like doing a lot of the advocacy work I do and legislative efforts I'm able to support. Because when you get government agencies or larger organizations willing to have those conversations and to have kind of rolling trainings or rolling you know, circumstances where they're able to make improvements, I think that's when you see the most effective pathway to change.
That is really good to hear and interesting to talk about as well. You highlighted some areas as I was getting to know you on your website mm-hmm. for L. And you focused on the areas you listed were anxiety, self-esteem, mm. depression, anger management, stress. And I was like, wow. Because
you were like, stop reading my diary, please. Yep.
Uh-huh. You know, because you're looking at, these are the things that even though I might manage them some days better than other people do, at some point in life, we're all dealing with some, you know, with these triggers for different reasons. And it wasn't like you explained them. That was what I think really caught me. They were just standalone, like they were just islands, columns, supporting themselves within themselves. Anxiety, self-esteem, depression, anger management, stress. No explanation, no definition, no examples, no anecdotes. Whatever this mm-hmm. is to you, take yep. this and you associate it with yourself. However you choose, however you need to. And of course, you're on my website, so give me a call. But I kind of like the standalone approach because you weren't telling anyone how to think about it, which says a lot about Absolutely who you not. Are as a psychologist, because your website isn't telling anyone how to think about it.
I really appreciate that feedback. It's something we call in the psychology field projective, meaning who the heck am I to tell you what stress looks like, right? So this is, it's more of an open-ended question. Do you see yourself reflected there? And if you do, cool. I'm also good enough and I've been doing this more than a few weeks where I know I might not be the best fit for everybody. And that's okay too. It's more important for me to ensure that the person has got a resource that is going to work best for them. That might be me. That might be somebody else in the community, right?
Right.
And when I have that on the website, people are able to then call in and say, hey, this is what I'm experiencing. We have another concept that we talk about, which is cultural humility, but just professional humility in the sense that, yeah, absolutely. I'm the doctor in the room. I'm the expert on, you know, subject matter expert on all of these different experiences, but I am never going to be the expert in you and your lived experience. That's where the patient, the client, the person I'm talking to, they're in charge of that. They help me understand what it's like for them. And then we together collaboratively are able to work towards something like, what are your goals? What are you trying to get towards? Some people have real fancy words for that or like real specific things that they want to do. I want to cry less. I want to be able to fall asleep more. I want to improve my relationships. Other people are like, Doc, I'm just tired of living like this. And I say, okay, so let's figure out where you want to be and let's help you get there.
Right. Find the source. We know what the effects are. Let's find the source, the cause of the effects. I want to make sure we put the qualifier out there because we haven't done that. I mentioned that you have a number of different degrees from various universities that you've been acquiring since 2000, and I think it was seven. But that is to say, what is your, you know, timeline of experience? How long have you been in this business? How many years of expertise? I just want people to I don't want them to think you started a year or two ago because you've done your time. And, you know, through the forensic psychology to offering the personal consultation services through L Psychology Services. I want people to know how long you've been in the business.
Sure. If they did not pick up from my reference to a phone book.
I did pick that up. The paperback that they used to deliver to your door, right? They would bring you the new issues.
Right.
Why are you telling people? Why are you telling our business like that? Stop it.
I am telling them. Stop. We'll edit that out for just my own mental health benefits.
Stop it.
No, but I got my undergrad degree. Goodness. I want to say, 2007, the first time I started doing work in correctional settings. So like at a jail doing intakes and therapy would be 2006. So I've been doing work in correctional psychology since 06. I got my master's degree in 2010. I got my first, I call it my first big girl job, but my first full-time mental health professional job. With my master's degree in 2011. So I've been doing mental health professional stuff 13 years or so.
Okay.
And I've been a psychologist for the past 4 years.
Okay. Why did you choose Las Vegas? I mean, from North Dakota to here, was there a particular reason that you ended up here?
Yeah, I have lived per my degrees, almost all over the country in Massachusetts and New England, in North Dakota, and Chicago, and St. Louis, and I have family out here. My spouse and I have family, and we wanted to be near them, and so we moved out in 2018 and have been here ever since. And I'm tired of giving moving companies money, and we're here to stay.
Sometimes I just love to hear the reasons, because people come here for lots of different reasons, and I like to share what, you know, the draw was or the thing that made Las Vegas where you place the anchor. And so sometimes I like to share that information because it's, I think, a really unique qualifier, interesting qualifier of how a person came to. Why is it work? Was it weather? Was it family? Just was it opportunity? Yeah. Was it just something new? Just a different space? Because for some, just being in the desert alone, if you come from the East Coast and Southeast, is a different experience because it's just climate-wise and the scenery is absolutely different as well. When you get out into it, and so different things draw people to different places. We're getting into the last 5 minutes or so of the show, and I want to also talk a little bit, if we can just touch on the population. And I know you're there for everyone, but you do a little bit of focus, too, mentioned on LGBTQ, AI, and Black, Indigenous, people of color communities. The reason for that focus... because that's a sensitive and surreal. In this day and age, as we become more and more aware and receptive and embracing, that's it's a distinct population.
Sure. I'm a person that thinks that multiple things can be true. I have clients that joke with me that my favorite phrase in therapy is "and also." So I'm going to hit y'all with an "and also." Mental health, behavioral health is for everyone. Period. End of sentence. New sentence. One of my specialties is working with Black identified folks and queer or LGBTQ folks. And I think that there's important levels of understanding. I've had additional training on how to work with trans folks through like WPATH standards. I've had additional training that helps me better understand populations in much the same way that I have colleagues that work with and I've had additional training for folks with an autism spectrum disorder diagnosis. So I think part of it is for therapy, for some people, it can be about identity. For some people, they look for a Black psychologist. They look for a queer psychologist because maybe they're healing some hurts that they experienced with folks that maybe didn't have the training or weren't in the community. So therapy for me is absolutely for everybody. We treat everybody. And sometimes people have particular identity factors and that becomes important. So I wanted to make sure to be able to better serve the communities that I reside in as well.
Well, thank you for that. Thank you for that thoughtfulness. And to anyone out there who is looking for someone who has the expertise in the level of sensitivity, understanding, and cultural experiences and differences in the psychology services space for LGBTQ, AI, and Black, Indigenous people of color, Dr. Lauren Chapel Love is here for you. Lauren, I want to make sure we share your handles so people I know can find you on all the social media platforms. But to make it easy for them, please share your Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and anything else that you have out there. And just make sure they know your website, too, to do a little research and to be able to find you.
Sure, 100%. I have a name that sounds fake. It sounds like I picked it out specifically for Vegas, but it's not. It's just my name. So my name is Dr. Lauren Chapel - Love, like going to the chapel, going to get married. I do psychotherapy for people with depression, anxiety, stuff going on, stress, relationships, and sports psychology stuff. I if I don't have expertise in it, I will send you to someone who perhaps is more well versed in it. But I do quite a bit. I can be found via my website, which is drchapellove.com, chapellove.com. And I have got some handles which are at Dr. Chapel Love. So I try and keep things nice and simple once you figure out how to spell my name.
I can appreciate that. And I would assume those handles are on everything that we believe is near and dear and popular, which would include what used to be Twitter, which is now X, whatever X even stands for. I guess it's just exponential thought processes and communications across whatever number of characters they allow you to put on an X post. And then, of course, Instagram and, Faithful, Facebook, right?
Yeah, and TikTok for a little bit longer.
Okay, so right, that is on the chopping block. Well, Lauren, thank you for getting up and grabbing your cup of coffee or tea or whatever your favorite drink is there, and spending some time with me this morning on The Scoop. I appreciate you coming and talking with me and my listening audience. Thank you.
Not a problem at all. I'm happy to wake up early for you. Thank you for having me.
You've been wonderful. Las Vegas, thank you for tuning in to another edition of The Scoop with me, Tanya Flanagan, here on 91.5 KUNV, Jazz and More Public Radio. I want to thank you for tuning in to The Scoop with me, Tanya Flanagan, and I want to invite you to get social with me. I'm on Facebook and Twitter. My name is my handle, TanyaFlanagan. You can also find me on Instagram at Tanya Almanize Flanagan. And if you have a thought, an opinion, or a suggestion, don't hesitate to shoot me an email to tanya.flanagan@unlv.edu. Thanks again for joining in. Stay safe and have a great week.